Hello and welcome back. My name is Seth Juarez. We're here at Build 2016. We're kind of winding down, but before we left, I thought it important that we talk about .NET Core. And so if you have any questions, please, please, please have them come in. We're going to answer all the questions. If you fill up the question window, we'll just do that. And so please do that. And also, I have questions too. So let's introduce ourselves. We'll start from here to there. From here to here, tell us who you are, what you do, and why you're so cool.
I'm Beth Massey. I'm the product manager for .NET.
And that's different, right?
That's not that's actually different. It's different than what I was. I was a program manager for .NET, and now I'm a product manager. So I'm in marketing now.
So that's like a promotion, right?
Nice.
I don't know.
Rich is scaring me. I like it. Rich is going to marketing next.
Yeah, totally.
We need you. Yeah. Actually, it's a challenge and it's fun. It's just something new for me, but I'm still close to the product I love. So.
Awesome. She made the awesome shirt she's wearing.
I did. I actually, this is my first marketing
.NET. All. How come you didn't send me one?
I thought we knew each other. Go to Microsoft.com WACnet. That's also my.
So I have to go to a website. You're not going to bring it over. What the heck?
No, I'll bring this over.
Oh, okay, nice.
That's the second thing I've done.
Nice. Oh my. We're way off topic now.
Love it.
I'm Rich Lander. I'm a program manager on the .NET team. I've been working on .NET a long time. Since .NET 2.0, I've shipped that and pretty much all the other .NET releases since then. And right now, most of my time is spent on either .NET Core or our GitHub open source project.
Okay.
I am Scott Hunter, and I am on the .NET team. I joined Microsoft a couple years ago, and I'm mainly known for ASP.NET because that's where I started at Microsoft. Uh-huh. But we merged the teams back together a few months ago, and so now we're one .NET team again, and I am .NET now.
So that's interesting, right? Because you said it really fast. Right? It's all one thing now, you know? Really quick. And why don't you describe sort of how things were working before and how they're working now? Maybe if that helps. Look, here's the thing. ASP.NET, fairly open, like ridiculously open. .NET, the same thing. I think it's important that people realize that this time around with .NET, you literally got to see the inside of how we build stuff. And just like every other developer, sometimes you make decisions and then you change them and things get better, right? So why don't you talk about that?
Yeah, we can kind of talk about the history of how we landed where we are today, which is the ASP.NET team about 2 years ago started trying to figure out what the next ASP.NET would be. What were the key things we wanted to try to accomplish in the platform? And some of those were cross-platform, some of those were being open source. Basically, the idea was we want to remove every restriction on why you would choose not to use our technology. Performance, cross-platform, open source, knock them all down, have an awesome framework. And we rushed ahead and started reimagining what we thought .NET might look like in that kind of ecosystem. And at the same time that was going on, the .NET guys are busy working on the Universal Windows platform, which we shipped as part of Windows 10. And so we built this technology called DNX, .NET Execution Library, which was something that was built mainly to serve the web, and it was not generic enough to actually serve everything, console applications, class libraries, and that kind of thing. Once these guys peeled off of UWP, we kind of got together as two teams again and said, let's go figure out how to reconcile this stuff and put it all back together. And that's the .NET CLI that you see today and the RC2 bits that we're going to ship sometime, hopefully this month. And that's basically taking the DNX concept that we had in ASP.NET, genericizing it back down into something that if you're building a native app on a machine, you could use. If you want to build an app that has all of the framework bits inside of the folder of the app, you could do. That if you want to build an ASP.NET application that you could do. And so, it's kind of the culmination of both teams' thinkings coming together into a single unified product. And some of the stuff that the ASP.NET team had done was mainly just point-in-time kind of stuff. You know, the whole experience is interesting from a couple of perspectives. One is, because we did it all in the open, I feel like we've left a wake of destruction behind us.
Right. This is a wake you would have never seen otherwise, right?
In the old Microsoft, it'd be a black box, there'd be a firewall, you would never know what was going on behind the scenes. But because of this, I can't tell you how many names have we used, Rich, for
several
things. We have this technology in NuGet called a TFM, and that's what you kind of target. I have a trail of these things that we've created and left behind us, and so I will look forward to the day that we ship the RTM of this stuff, and I can go find a way to slowly hide all the destruction
the
that we
names.
Left behind And maybe a year from now, turn them all completely off.
And I'm learning in marketing, actually, that it's really important what code project name you pick from the very beginning of a GitHub repo, because that will just stick forever.
That'll stick forever.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's impossible to change.
It's impossible to get rid of Roslyn now. Roslyn, everybody knows what Roslyn is, right? Because that's the repo name.
It's a cool name.
It's a very cool name, but it is the code name.
Yeah. So that's kind of the transition of what the ASP.NET team was doing versus what the .NET team was doing now versus what we both are doing as a unified team.
And so it's like cousins like came together and were like, hey, we are building sort of the same thing. Let's put it, I'll be honest with you, and Rich, we'll let you comment from the .NET side. I'll be honest, I started converting some of the libraries that I built over to .NET Core, and there was confusion for me. I'm like, well, which TFM should I use to make it work on all of them, right? And if those that don't know what a TFM is, good. Hopefully you won't need to later on, It is horrible.
Customers should not need to know what TFM is.
No offense, right? But I had a horrible time. Should I use DNX 451? Well, should I add this one? Is it Net Standard? Is it Net Standard 511? And so a TFM, for those who don't know, is that the framework moniker or something like that?
Target framework.
See, I don't even know. So let's go from the .NET side. How sort of you evolved and now how they're sort of meeting together.
Well, I'm not going to just repeat everything Scott said, because he did kind of tell both sides of the story. You know, I think on one side, I like this part about the destruction piece. Internally, we actually call that sausage making.
Right, yes.
Because no one likes to see sausage making. And so I think one of the things we're trying to do is make it so that people have more insight into the thinking, but try and make it so that it's more clear what's still completely experimental in nature.
Right.
So don't take any hard dependencies on that. And what is starting to feel like ready to eat sausage.
Right.
So that's definitely something we're still working on. I feel pretty good about where we're landing now. A different way to describe the DNX to CLI thing is DNX was really three things in one package. It was a set of APIs that you could target. We call that a shared framework. The other thing was that it was a set of command line tools. And the third thing was it was a set of runtime services that were exposed up into your app.
The host.
And that was, the host and the runtime services are kind of all one and the same. And so you had to take all of that or none of it, because it was all one thing. With the new system that we've built, we still really have those three concepts, but now you don't have to use all of them. You can use the .NET CLI tools to target .NET Core or something else. You can use the shared framework or not. There's a lot more choice, and we felt like for something as broad as the .NET ecosystem, that was actually super fundamentally necessary. Like, I'm actually wearing a Xamarin shirt right now.
Right.
I work with those folks all the time, great people. And it should be the case that if they wanted to adopt this technology, they could. I think it would have been difficult for them to adopt the DNX thing. With the way it's architected now, they can.
So it's kind of like there's some great work happening with the .NET team, there was some great work happening with the web teams, and then when we put it together, this sort of this super .NET's coming out of the end.
You get the best of both worlds.
Yeah.
And that's awesome. All right, so again, we want your questions. Have your questions come in, because there's a lot of them, and we're just going to start to go through them. Would like you guys to comment on the Lester Scott slide yesterday where a new name concept was introduced, .NET Standard Library, and how that relates to .NET Foundation, and in more detail, how that relates to .NET Core and the other app model runtime. This is a good one. We're all looking at you, man.
Yeah. There's actually a couple questions.
Love that, my new role.
I know.
Yeah.
He was here the other day, and there was like hard question, and he goes, "What do you have to say about that?"
Yeah.
It's my favorite watching people sweat bullets, man.
Yeah. ASP.NET. What do you?
Yeah. It's all good. So I work on these topics. So the first part is, how do .NET Standard Library and .NET Foundation relate to one another? Well, not really. They don't really relate to one another at all, in the sense that .NET Standard Library is a technological concept. .NET Foundation is the open source organization under which we work, so different things completely. .NET Standard Library is really an API spec. That's how you should think about it. It could almost be just a piece of paper that said, these are all the APIs that you can get access to if you target .NET Standard Library 1.2.
Right.
It happens to be codified in .NET assemblies so that you can give something to the compiler, but it's effectively just a piece of paper. And then, so the idea is that .NET implementations like .NET Core and .NET Framework will implement particular .NET standard versions. And then if you build a library, you can say, this library was compiled for .NET standard 1.4. As a result, it can run on all these platforms. And so in that way, it's very similar to PCL, portable class libraries. Right. We actually think about .NET standard library as being kind of the next step after PCL. That's the answer.
Got it. That's a good one.
You should say, but .NET standard, the idea is one of the negatives of PCLs was it was kind of the intersections.
Oh, yeah.
It was the smallest intersections of all the frameworks that we had.
It was a PETA.
And so you end up with this little tiny thing in the middle. That's all you can actually share across all these things.
Yeah.
And the goal with .NET standard is to just widen that out.
Yeah. The way I think about it is PCL was happenstance API spec. So it's like this platform used this set of .NET APIs, this platform used this other set, and you literally just use intersection mechanics to find out what are the set that are common.
Right.
So it's very happenstantial. There's actually
the more buttons you check.
There's actually no person. We didn't actually take a, you know, smart Microsoft engineer to go and say what APIs should be available. It was purely a machine that determined that. Whereas with .NET standard, there's actually people who say, these are the APIs that you should have access to write modern applications.
I see.
So it kind of shows our organization structure too in a way, very strong.
That makes sense. Like I had never understood this. So now if I'm like, I want to support everything, the machine would be like, sorry, can't. And then when you started unchecking things, more stuff would show up. And this was a machine telling you, oh wow, this doesn't exist. This doesn't exist.
Yeah. That was the Microsoft API bot framework helping you out there.
Nice. But now you're saying, instead of doing that, let's be more specific about this is what should be available in .NET Standard 1.
Yeah, and we have a set of people who think through that, and we always want to add more APIs so that Seth can be happy when he's writing his apps.
And I wasn't happy when
Beth is marketing the product to our customers. She wants to be able to say, look at all these APIs you can use.
Make it easier for me, please.
And that's a really good way to look at it. I didn't understand. I understood that something was happening, but I didn't know it was a machine telling me, sorry, can't do that, right?
And now it's more like the C standard library or the C++ standard library that we actually decide to go write and give to you.
Right.
And if someone's like, hey, I want to implement this .NET standard for whatever device and we want to use Mono or some other thing they build, we say, if you want to be compatible with .NET standard, these are the APIs you must implement or it won't work.
Yeah.
Yes.
And that's much better.
Yeah, and we're talking to our friend Miguel about that very topic.
Oh,
and,
okay.
And he likes it.
It's sort of like it's open architecture, really.
Yeah.
I mean, is. You know, the collaboration that, you know, you started with just like .NET Core is expanded across multiple implementations of .NET now, and I think that's really exciting. It's like the ecosystem itself is open architecting this.
And that's cool because instead of things just being compatible because they happen to have the same APIs, now we're saying if you want to be compatible, this is what you have to do.
Yeah.
And I like that a lot better. All right. Marcelo, when should we expect .NET Core to be on par with .NET 4.6 functionalities? You get this question probably 6 times every hour. Let's just answer it now. What do you think?
Well, there's a couple of ways to think about that.
Yeah.
Certainly, we have several layers. I would say we have a runtime layer, kind of a base class library layer, and then we have an app model layer. The runtime is already more or less, they're already more or less the same across those, so we're pretty good there. At a BCL layer, we definitely have some more APIs to add. We know about that, so we want to bring .NET Core BCL and .NET Framework BCL more to parity. On the app model side,
make the standard bigger.
Yeah, basically make the .NET standard bigger. On the app model side, we have WPF, Windows Forms, ASP.NET Web Forms. Those will stay on .NET Framework and be great, and you'll have a lot of success building apps for those on Windows. It's really difficult for us to go port those application models to, say, Linux. Like, WPF is intrinsically a Windows app.
.NET 4.6 is a Windows platform.
Yeah.
And as you saw the slides yesterday, one of the slides showed, hey, how is this delivered? .NET Framework is delivered with Windows. .NET Core and Xamarin are both delivered with the application. And so the things that the app models that live in .NET Framework are Windows app models.
Of course.
Like WinForms and WPF. There's no plans to try to move those to .NET Core because .NET Core is inherently a cross-platform technology. And as Rich said, we will continue to invest there, and we'll make sure that those are awesome. They're the best ways to build desktop applications on Windows. They let you run from Windows 7 all the way through Windows 10, and that will remain that way.
Yeah, that's
We even announced some cool stuff yesterday, the Centennial stuff, right, where you could even take some of those types of applications and be able to actually move them into the Windows Store in the Windows 10 ecosystem, and even do things like put live tiles on them and have them take advantage of the search capabilities inside the OS. Mm-hmm. So where you kind of get the benefits of both a UWP application and a WinForm or WPF application at the same time.
Yeah,
it's a cross Windows version platform.
Right.
You can think of it that way, like, because a lot of these applications have the UI piece or business applications, right? And they're businesses that are running Windows, and people want to know, can I install the next version of Windows and have my business application still run, right?
Right.
Can I take advantage of a corporate store or a store, you know, just the store? And yes, now you can. This is kind of like, if you're really like thinking about why would I think about moving to Linux, for instance, you might not ever think about that because
right.
that's not, you have a business application. You just want to think about, is it ever going to move with Windows? And
right.
that's what we're helping you do.
And the cool thing is we had people from the Project Centennial on, and I literally was having a hard time understanding how you go about this, but then when they explained it, it all really made sense. And so if you want to go back and watch that, they literally explained, and I was kind of dense, and so I kept asking the questions, and I finally understood. You can actually move it over pretty quickly, and then piece by piece move it fully over.
Yeah, I mean, one thing, we are working directly with the Centennial team in Windows, and we definitely want to make it so that people who have bet on Windows Forms or WPF, that they can be successful using the new Centennial technology. And we're working actively on that right now.
They have a demo in Redmond that actually ran earlier this week that I unfortunately could not show yesterday just because I didn't have the right build of Windows and everything to make it go. But we're as Rich said, we're moving very fast to make this an awesome story.
Awesome. All right, well, let's go. We're going to burn through a lot of questions because we only have 9 minutes left. How is the .NET Core X platform organized code-wise? One code base per platform or one code base with lots of conditional compilation?
Yep. So it's
all those.
Yeah, it's a mix. For the most part, it's a single code base. I mean, we definitely don't want to like fork our code base and build two .NETs
right.
with different bugs across Linux and Mac.
Sure.
That's definitely not the plan. So it's, if you look on GitHub, it's one product. There definitely is conditional compilation. In addition, we actually have a layer underneath C#, underneath managed code, in between the runtime and the framework. That's actually a set of shims that actually basically provide a PAL, platform abstraction layer,
of
the native OS, so that managed code doesn't need to know quite as much about the differences between, say, the various Linuxes. That's the basic model. Conditional compilation and then a platform abstraction shim for the different OSs. And that works super well, actually. I believe the Chakra team, who they're the ones with the JavaScript engine.
Right.
They actually took the shim, this platform abstraction layer, from CoreCLR into Chakra so that they could potentially do cross-platform.
And that's interesting, right? Because people don't realize that just a file descriptor is different. And if you're doing file I/O from Linux to Windows, it's different.
Yeah. Well, in addition to that, on Windows we have hResults.
Uh-huh.
Unix, they're called ArNOS, error numbers. And they actually don't even agree between Linux distributions. So we actually need the C++ compiler to actually fix that up for us. And that's one of the reasons we have a native platform abstraction layer for us. So it's actually quite complicated under the covers. But none of our customers need to know anything about that.
Yeah, but it's kind of nice, right? It's like, man, I know how that works.
You know how that works now.
All right, next question. I have lots of legacy code I still need to support. Code that requires SOAP services. What's the status of getting SOAP web service into .NET Core?
Sounds like a good one for you.
I also need support for MSMQ, Microsoft Messaging.
Passing that one his way.
I would say right now we're focused on shipping .NET Core.
Okay.
And until we ship .NET Core, I don't think we're even going to think about the things on this slide yet, or this question. That said, we want to allow customers to move to .NET Core as soon as they can. So we are looking at potentially bringing some SOAP services to .NET Core, but I would not go, if you're expecting us to take WCF and port the entire WCF to .NET Core, I don't think that makes sense, and we're not going to do that. There's a great implementation of WCF that runs on .NET Framework today, which works great and is usable today. So maybe a subset of that would come to .NET Core for people that want some light SOAP stuff. Or we add some SOAP capabilities to ASP.NET Web API, for example. But I don't think the plan would bring... We have a great WCF stack that runs on .NET Framework today. I don't see any reason to just bring it up, bring it completely over.
I guess the question is, do I have to move my stuff over to ASP.NET Core? I mean,
or .NET Core.
Or .NET Core. Do I? Is this something that I should do? Because I think people have this sense, and maybe you can correct it here, that we're just going a full-out core, and everything else is just like, yeah, that's cool too.
We just described even in the slide yesterday that things like WinForms and WPF and even ASP.NET System Web, they are in the app. Those app models live in .NET Framework.
Right.
And they're going to stay in that .NET Framework. So obviously, those app models will continue to exist and move forward in .NET Framework. The message we were trying to send yesterday was, there's a pile of app models. There's the three app models that we talk about there. If you go to Core, Core's got UWP and ASP.NET Core. And Xamarin's got iOS, Mac OS X, and Android.
Right.
Really, what we want to do for the .NET Framework customers is actually innovate in that standard library.
Yeah.
Because if I innovate down there, everybody gets the benefits of that.
Benefit, yeah.
And so the real goal is you shouldn't feel like you have to move to one of these app model verticals. And instead, you'll get the benefits of the latest compiler features, the latest language features, the latest .NET standard library. Performance improvements. No matter where you are. So if you're a WCF customer, enjoy the new standard library that we're going to have later this year, and enjoy the C# 7 features that are coming later this year, and you should be happy that your WCF runs great on .NET Framework.
Well, we also did a blog post day one of build on the new features coming with .NET Framework 4.6.2
right.
preview. Definitely some good things in there for that people have been asking us for. That we're really happy to deliver that are going to make customer apps great.
New crypto stuff, ASP.NET guys added some system web stuff, added some new async support for cache providers and membership providers. So it's not like these things are going to stop.
Right.
They keep on coming.
Yeah.
All right, quick fire, 4 minutes. Why does .NET Core do away with exes? It's harder to locate the entry point assembly in a folder of DLLs. Mono could just mono.exe some exe. Wow, that was a mouthful.
That's a good question. We should enable that option.
In the long run, that will happen.
Yeah.
Good. Let's move to the next one. Will the .NET All the Things shirt be available for us commoners to purchase? I'm a commoner. She won't even bring me one, man.
Yes. We have a swag repo. I'll add it, and we'll get it on Spreadshirt.
Next
.NET Spreadshirt.com.
From Bob, how is adoption of .NET Core going with open source library community? Are people moving stuff over to .NET Core and open source?
Yep. We actually have a couple folks on our team that are tracking that. Basically, our model is we've been working with the third-party libraries that are the lowest in the stack, the ones that are most typically depended on, either by apps or other libraries. We've been working with them to get them ported to Core. Also, critical functionality like unit testing frameworks that a lot of apps rely on, libraries rely on. And then nail that, and then go up to the next layer in the stack.
That said, the most important thing for us is to actually ship .NET Core, because right now the platform has been changing so much underneath the customer that if you're one of these open source frameworks, I'd be afraid in some ways to actually try too hard today. We're probably, as soon as RC2 ships, that's when things are going to lock down, and you're going to see the new model with the standard library and stuff like that. I think you'll see a lot more adoption happen at that point, but we've done the DNX, we've done the .NET CLI, stuff has moved around. We just have to ship a 1.0 so people can actually build on top of us.
I agree.
Love it. With the .NET standard library, are we to expect system.drawing that Xamarin submitted to the .NET Foundation to be part of a library, and are we to expect the same package idea for the main framework going forward? GDI.
That's a good question.
That's
so
a great question.
System.drawing has a couple things at once. One is there's just the API shape.
Right.
Tons of people use that API shape. It's a good one. I think we've all used in apps that we've written. There's the system drawing implementation on Windows that uses GDI. That's definitely not something we can go forward with from a long-term perspective, particularly for servers, and definitely for cross-platform.
Yeah.
Miguel, actually, back to Xamarin again, they actually just released this Skia library. that might be an interesting thing for us to use as the base of system.drawing. It's an option. I think we understand that we need a system.drawing implementation for core.
Of course.
It's back to what Scott keeps on saying. We got to ship first, and then I think we'll start looking at how we enable libraries like that on top.
That's crazy. We have to ship. People keep asking to add something or change something or do something, and we can't have an ecosystem until we actually ship the product.
It's really hard to market a product that doesn't exist.
Yeah.
Hey, are you having a tough time at it?
Actually, I'm actually really excited about shipping too, because we have a ton of stuff we want to do to really raise up more awareness, more training. We've got .NET Conf coming
up later.
We should
talk about .NET Conf.
Let's talk about it. We have a minute. Tell us
about that. We've got .NET Conf coming up June 7th through 9th, people. All right? Yeah. We're going to have 3 days of training, heavy duty.
From Channel 9.
From Channel 9, Seth?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
We will be there. We're so excited. Like I'm saying, look, I've been a .NET guy from before it even shipped, because I was using BB6, wasn't a fan, .NET barely came out, I was still in beta.
And I
was like, hey, we're moving over to C# right now. So I remember I've had this sort of relationship with C#. It's cool to see that now C# can be used sort of in a lot of places. All right, so we have about 30 seconds. Final words, we'll start with Beth and move our way over.
I'm super, super excited about the future of .NET. I mean, I wouldn't have tried a whole new career change without like at least feeling like I have a product that I love.
Sure,
I want to make sure that people love the product as much as I do.
My thing is, I work with the Xamarin folks a lot. I'm very enthusiastic about the acquisition and that I can call those folks coworkers.
Yeah.
And I'm super happy to see the ASP.NET team and the .NET teams merge together back into one unified team. And so we have a unified .NET across Xamarin, ASP.NET, and .NET.
This is really good stuff. I feel like the family is finally back together. This is great. Thanks so much for watching again. We're here in San Francisco, California. We'll see you on the flip side.